Did you know the average couple waits 6 years to get help in their marriage?
Yeah, that's 6 years of pain, hurt, and frustration.
Hi there, I'm Sharla Snow.
And I'm Robert Snow.
And welcome to Master Your Marriage,
where we believe that having an amazing marriage should never feel like hard work and shouldn't be a guessing game.
This is the show for married couples who want to discover a scientifically proven approach to building a masterful marriage and have fun while doing it.
So if that's you, you're in the right place. Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome back to Master Your Marriage Podcast. We have some funny tales and stories to share about our trip last week.
Yeah, we just got back. We were traveling last week and we flew to Knoxville and then we took an Uber.
Oh my gosh.
All the way up to Gatlinburg, which is over an hour drive. I didn't realize that. I thought it was a little shorter
because I looked 30 miles away. Who knew it was an hour and 10?
And I thought, well, okay, it's going to be a little while. I'm going to just snuggle up in the back seat and put on my headset. And I'm going to finish a project that needed to be done by the end of that day. But
what that really sounds like is I'm going to strand Robert talking to the Uber driver for an hour and 10. So while I did have an interesting conversation, I was glad that Charlotte was able to join me in that.
Our Uber driver was not on board with me checking out.
Nope.
First,
not allowed.
He took us on a scenic route. And it was not the shortest way to get to our destination at all. I guess he wanted to show us. He was excited to show us the views of the Smoky Mountains, which were beautiful.
Yes, absolutely. Love Tennessee. You guys who live there, you have beautiful country.
It is beautiful. But then for like an hour and a half during this drive, there was not a moment of silence. So, of course, I had to close my laptop. Just rolled with it because he clearly wasn't going to stop talking and I wasn't going to get any work done. And I tell you what, that was one wild ride. That was one of the most entertaining conversations I think I've ever had with somebody that I just met.
And we talked about everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
From flying planes.
Yes.
To hypnosis. To psychology. To Carl Jung. He was a quote factory, wasn't he?
He was. He was a walking quote factory. Yeah. Good stuff, too. I mean, it wasn't cringy.
No, conversation
at all.
He was actually a hypnotherapist. So it was actually really fun.
Yeah.
But there was one point where he said something I had to write down because I thought, oh my gosh, that is something worth contemplating for all of us inside of ourselves. So what did he say?
Yeah. And the funny thing is this was the day before we were recording the content for our relationship reboot, right?
Yeah.
The course. So our minds are thinking on relationships. Not that we don't always think about that. But,
yeah.
But what he said was, he said, you know, he said, that's funny. He said, the truth is, people don't want to hear someone else's opinion. What they want to do is they want to hear their opinion coming out of your mouth. And I thought that was really interesting. And Charlotte was like, oh my gosh, I have to write that down. And I'm going to share that on our podcast next week. And here you are.
Yes, exactly.
In true fashion, we're sharing it. And it's true. By and large, we don't really want to know someone else's opinion. We're really happy with our own. Our ego is well satisfied with our own opinion. We claim that we're open-minded and that we can hold two opinions in our hands, but we're not really that open-minded. We really want to have our opinion, our thoughts validated. And what we want to hear is our opinion coming out of someone else's mouth. And when we do, we're best friends. We really are. And it's equally true in our intimate relationships, and if not more so, don't you think?
Oh my gosh. Yes. And I think, why is this? Why is it that, I mean, I've been with you for 34 years, almost 35 years, and still to this day, you know, I can still feel that little bit of resistance when you want to tell me something that's different than what I think or what my idea, opinion, or perception is. And I think it's because we are terribly uncomfortable to hear an opinion other than our own.
Yeah.
I think it is so uncomfortable. Desperately want to be right.
We've seen those TV shows where they're like, why can't you just agree with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. We want to be right.
Just crying out for help in the background.
It is.
Unwilling to consider another opinion.
That's it. It's the ego. So that's why I wanted to talk about this idea of discomfort today.
Yeah.
This is something that I don't think you hear a lot of people talking about, but I think it's really important to talk about and recognize the importance of discomfort. The value of discomfort. I mean, how often do you think about how discomfort is actually important, that it's actually valuable for your growth? I think
I don't think about it. I don't want to be uncomfortable.
Exactly. Now, if you've listened to our show for a little while, you know that we share a lot of tips on a lot of different topics, from intimacy to communication to conflict management to friendship. But what do you think? This is a question for you, our audience. What do you think is the number one skill needed to make a relationship work? Do you think it's communication, conflict resolution, friendship? No, it's actually none of those things. Here's what I think it is. Those are all very important, absolutely, and they definitely help to elevate a relationship. But the most important skill, I think, is learning to sit in discomfort and to be able to stay present with it, both your own discomfort and also your partner's discomfort, without letting yourself regress to a losing strategy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think that's it. I think it's being able to sit and stay present with discomfort. So when your partner shares their hurt, can you sit in that discomfort and listen without getting defensive or shutting down?
Yeah,
can absolutely. Can you track yourself? Can you track your automatic responses when you're uncomfortable, when you're stressed? And look at those and take responsibility for your own impact, even when you see the other person's part in it too, and it may feel unfair. And going back to this topic, when your partner shares an honest, difficult perspective that's different from yours, can you sit in that discomfort and still be curious enough about what it is that they have to say?
I love that. I think that wasn't last year, but the year before, my theme for the year was, can I be curious?
Mm-hmm, it was. I remember that. And be willing to, again, sit in that discomfort. I think that skill of being able to sit in discomfort is so important.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny. It's not really as much of a skill as we think it is. It's a muscle that you have to strengthen. Skills are great, but if you don't develop the muscle to sit in discomfort without getting triggered, without getting flooded, all those skills and scripts that you've learned won't matter one bit. I promise you, when you're heated, when you get spun up, you're going to forget every script, every skill that you've memorized. The moment the pressure gets on, you just get amnesia. You can't remember anything. And afterwards, you're replaying that event and you feel terrible. You're kicking yourself for saying things and doing things. That's why the greatest flex, as Brené Brown says, I think it's Brené Brown, can you sit in discomfort and breathe yourself through it?
I really do think you're right. I think that is the greatest flex.
I mean, that's the important part. Can we remain calm when our other person is struggling?
And I think that's the real growth. It's not just talking about growth. That's actually doing the work that actually creates the growth. And it's not easy and it's messy and you won't get it right and you'll mess it up. But we're never going to grow by avoiding discomfort. We get there and we get to growth because we develop the capacity and the muscle, as you just said, to move through that discomfort without blowing up at each other or giving each other the silent treatment for weeks on end. And that's why, despite all the other tools that we share on the show, all the other tools we give to couples in coaching, this is the only one that really, truly matters. Because without it, none of those other skills that you learn will even be accessible.
And it's interesting because when you look at all the different tools and even the way we talk about the feedback wheel and we could go on and on, every one of those tools, when it talks about having difficult conversations, about accepting influence, any of those pieces, all revolve around being calm.
While uncomfortable. Totally.
Yeah. So let's look at an example. In our workbook that we just released called The Relationship Reboot, it's an annual reset system that we've done every year, and we've talked about that. There's a section on assessing your relationship where it is right now so that you can take an honest assessment and then reverse engineer the relationship and the reality that you really want. But I just want you to tap into how these questions cause some resistance or maybe some discomfort when you hear them.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yeah.
Ready for the first one?
Yeah. Read some of those to
us. So one, are we prioritizing our relationship? And as I ask that question, I'm thinking about it. Like, are we prioritizing relationship? This is a good question to be honest with. And if you are struggling in your relationship, this might be one that's going to cause some discomfort.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I have to look at myself.
Yeah.
Honestly. And self-honesty sucks.
Yeah. Next one. Do we still like each other? I feel like that's a little bit of a softball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, we still like each other. Mm-hmm. But are we still lovers?
Yeah. Yeah, we maybe still I should change that one.
Which goes to the next one. How's our sex life?
Mm.
And we know, and I think Charlotte's probably going to share an example a little bit later, like sometimes there's vastly different when it comes to higher desire and lower desire partners.
Totally.
Are we still friends?
Yep.
There's a difference between being married and being friends.
Totally.
And I think that if you can stay friends, it solves a lot of the other problems. Are we grateful for each other? On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you rate it on how you and your partner support and respect each other? 1 to 10.
So do any of those questions bring up a little discomfort for you as you hear Robert share them with you, as you contemplate honestly those questions? And again, to be clear, Robert already said this, but these questions are not to make you feel bad. They're just important, valuable questions for taking inventory of where you are right now. But they're only useful if you can tolerate the discomfort of hearing the answers. And can you do that without getting dysregulated? And if you and your partner have different answers, like if I rate our sex life at a 9 and Robert says, I think we're at about a 5.
See, I knew I'd come into this one, but I'm all right with it. No.
I bet we would both sit there hearing each other's answers, feeling a little confused, maybe a little angry, definitely uncomfortable with each other's answers. But can we move through that discomfort to better understand why he thinks we're a 5, why he thinks I'm a 9? Can we be curious? Can we attune? Or do we just want to hear our opinion coming out of the other person's mouth? So for example, how could I really blow this? If Robert rates it a 5, I rate it a 9, I could come back and say, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, how are you rating this a 5? Don't you get sex 3 times a week at minimum? I mean, seriously? I mean, a lot of people would be really glad to get sex 3 times a week. Like, is nothing ever good enough for you?
That would be bad.
That would be bad.
That would be a little bit right? rough.
Because I wasn't able to sit in the discomfort of understanding why he rated it a 5.
Absolutely. And if you remember back to an episode earlier this year, one of the most common losing strategies in relationships is the need to be right. This is such a pervasive pattern, and it's one of the most common losing strategies that keeps couples stuck in stage 2 of their relationship. Now, let's go back and talk a little bit about the stages of the relationship since I just brought that in. So let's talk about stage 1. Stage 1 is the infatuation stage. One of our teachers, Terry Real, calls this the love without knowledge phase. We call it the infatuation phase. It's where you show each other this perfectly curated version of each other. And this is love, and chemistry is high, and there's infatuation and conflict is low because you're really ignoring these little things that you saw because you're like, oh, well, he probably didn't really mean to do that. That's not really his personality or her. And so these red flags are just going past, and you're not seeing these little annoying quirks that will show up a little bit later as automatic patterns just yet.
And also during stage 1, there is this unconscious merging happened where there's a lot of enmeshment. Some people call that codependency, but it's just like, I need you so much to make me feel good. And I love who I am as I see myself through your eyes. Yeah. And this is all driven by hormones and neurotransmitters, and that neurochemistry it's involved in infatuation is intentional. It's biological. It's designed to bond us, but it's not designed to hold us together, and it's not designed to last. And this is where we slide into stage 2. And in this stage, it's all about the power struggle. So Terry Real, as Robert just mentioned, one of our teachers, he calls stage 2 the knowledge without love stage.
Ooh,
and this is where
doesn't sound fun.
You start to see things clearly, and maybe you don't love this person anymore. Maybe you hate this person now.
You have a quote when we hit stage 2, you're like, did I marry this person?
Yeah. Yeah. Did I make a mistake? And this is it. This is where couples really do say, like, did I make a mistake? Is there something wrong with this person? Is there something wrong with the relationship? But the truth is, the relationship is doing exactly what it's meant to do. You need to get through this stage before your relationship can really begin. So this is like day 1 of your marriage for real.
Yeah.
But it's scary because there's disillusionment involved, and you no longer are unconsciously merging with the other person. You're actually kind of separating and starting to be more independent and feeling misaligned.
Yeah. And you may not even like the other person.
Right. Totally. There's times when we didn't like each other in that stage.
Absolutely. I loved you. I just didn't like you.
Yeah. Sometimes
which
I hated
is
you.
Sort of hard. Yeah. Well, there is that. So this is where the losing strategies emerge as we navigate this sort of this push-pull defensiveness, needing to be right, control, retaliation, unbridled self-expression and withdrawal, all of these strategies we use in an effort to make our partner, notice I said the word make our partner, become something that they are not. And worst of all, none of these things actually work. They just drive us further. They drive a wedge in our relationship. Mm-hmm. We have less and less connection, less intimacy. It just pulls us apart. And this is where the loop, this stage two, most couples get stuck because they try to change you. They're working on some losing strategies, which just push you farther away. And then you start drifting farther and farther apart. And then you wonder if you can ever get back.
Yeah. It's a perpetual hamster wheel.
It's terrible. So stage two, how do you get out of this stage? And how do you end the power struggle? Well, it isn't about making the other person change. Mm-mm. Even though we all know the only person we really can change is ourselves. Yet for some reason, we still, in this stage, try to change our partner.
Yeah, isn't that hilarious? We know, we've all heard all the slogans.
The only person you can change
is yourself. Yeah. The only side of the street you can keep clean is your own. Like you hear all of those things, but yet what do? We still try to change the other person. That's what the power struggle is all about. So getting out of that stage, as Robert just said, isn't about making the other person change. It's not even about making your frustration go away, your pain go away, your anger go away. It's really about learning to speak about our pain, speak about and share what's going on inside of us without needing it to change the other person, without making a demand that the other person do anything about it. Because nobody changes when they feel like they're a project or when they feel like their autonomy is being snuffed out or when they feel like they're being controlled. Nobody changes when they're feeling controlled. But
nobody wants to change when they're feeling controlled.
No,
they actually pull back.
You dig in deeper. Yeah. But when you are able to speak about your own suffering, your pain, your frustrations, your hurts, without making demands or without having expectations of the other person, I think that's when stage three begins.
Yeah.
I think that's the beginning of moving into this more mature love.
And this is the best part, I think, of your relationship, and this is where we would like everybody to get to, is to this stage three. Terry Real calls the stage three, the love with knowledge stage. It's also called the interdependence phase. And this is where real intimacy can emerge because you finally become knowable to the other person. You and your partner become knowable to one another. And when you know each other, that's when intimacy can really blossom. Vulnerability happens. And this doesn't happen because your conflicts magically go away. Charlotte and I still have disagreements.
We're able to just name our experience. We're able to put words to what we're feeling, our pain or frustrations, without blaming.
Or freezing.
Freezing, right? Yeah. So it's being able to say what's going on without blaming and without collapsing.
Yeah. And then that allows you to describe your experience without being a jackass, without running out of the room. Yeah. And you can share what's going on inside of you without demanding that your partner do anything about it and let them choose whether or not they want to partner with you in a solution or not.
And here's the hilarious part. I think this is the irony is that when we let go of control, when we let go of needing to be right, when we let go of those losing strategies that Robert talked about, withdrawal, control, defensiveness, that is usually when the other person has the freedom to actually start to change for the better. Not always. There's no guarantee. And you certainly can't have that as an expectation. But that's usually when things get better. And ironically, when I know that Robert is choosing to collaborate with me, even when he doesn't have to, when he's choosing me and he's choosing to partner in this alliance with me, and when I realize he doesn't have to, that's what actually makes it so much more meaningful for me. If I force him to partner with me, then that doesn't feel very meaningful because I made you do it. But when I know he does it anyway, even though he doesn't have to, that's when it actually means something to me. So stage three is learning to be, yes, okay with your differences, making room for both of you and trying not to change each other. But it's also us being able to share our experiences without demands, without demanding change. And only in that place can we be real. only in that place can we be our real selves while staying in connection to another person.
That's the hard part. Yeah. While staying in connection.
Yeah. And only then can we be knowable. Like Robert said, knowing that is intimacy, really knowing.
So I wanted to just add a piece here. And I know, and I remember one time on one of my posts, not that I post very much, somebody said, how did you get to be so zen? What I want you guys to know and to hear is what Charlotte said earlier. She's like, yeah, sometimes I hated you.
Yeah.
So it's not that we're to this point at, if we say that we're in level three, it's not that we just fell here. It's that we worked our way here. But what I want you to know is that I have never had as many deep, non-scary conversations in my life as I have maybe in the past 10 years with you.
Yeah.
Like we talk about just really deep things that would have frightened me, that I would have avoided those conversations. I would have never had 8, 10 years ago, or yeah, maybe 10.
So it's like running towards the discomfort rather than away from it.
But there's also some trust in that. The trust that I know that you'll sit in discomfort.
Yeah.
When I tell you something that you may not necessarily like to hear, the trust that you have in me that I will try to sit in discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
If you have something that you
and not react
and want to share with me
or run or shut down.
And it's a place that you can get to. And it's a place where we'd love everybody to get to. You just need to work on building that muscle.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to this need to be right and wanting to hear your opinion come out of your partner's mouth.
Okay.
Yeah. If you can't let go of the need to be right, you'll never find yourself getting out of stage two and progressing to stage three, which is where we want to be. It takes a lot of self-honesty, a lot of self-confrontation, a lot of acknowledging where we engage in these losing strategies. Sometimes our need to be right is overt, and sometimes it's covert. It's pretty sneaky. Our ego's really, really working overtime in the background. But the wisdom here is that even when we're coming from a good place, people are less likely to listen to us when we're attached to being right. This is the only way to do it, my way. I've read a research article. Here's the article, and you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And if there's an attachment to being right, people feel that unconsciously, and they're going to resist collaborating with you. They're likely going to resist coming around to your point of view.
Exactly. All right. So let's quickly talk about the opposite of this need to be right, which is accepting influence.
Yeah.
Okay. We've talked about accepting influence before, but what that means is it doesn't mean that you're always just giving in. Yes, dear, whatever you say, dear. Sure, we'll do it your way, dear. Accepting influence just means you're willing to change your position, or you're at least willing to take your partner's opinion into account.
Yeah,
that's it.
Consider it. Yep.
You'll consider it. Exactly. You can decide together as a couple on what to do next. This relationship impacts both of you, so it's only fair that both of you get a say in those decisions, and that requires admitting that your partner has a valid perspective. They have a valid point, and so I have to be willing to consider it.
Yeah, I love that. I love when we talk about that. Sometimes hard for people to hear that even though you think you know the decision, are you willing to ask your partner and consider
something
and
else.
Even change your position based on that.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's great. It's which, by the way, is a sign of high intelligence. F. Scott Fitzgerald said, the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in your mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. And so what he's saying is true intelligence requires us to be open and consider new information and be humble enough to revise our beliefs and maybe change our path based on the new information that comes in.
Right.
Rather than what most people do, which is to double down on their position to protect their ego.
Exactly.
And that's the ego talking. You know, I love when we say most people do that, but most people's ego drives them to do that.
Exactly.
Intelligent people simply just see all information as data. And if the data points them to being wrong, that's just a data point. So they don't feel bad or less than for updating their position. They just gather fresh data, and it's just all new information for the system.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. Intelligent people are people who accept influence, and you can pick them out because what you hear them say when they're in relationships with other people is they'll say things like, you know, I used to believe that, or oh, you actually have a really good point.
Yeah.
Or, hey, Robert, I never considered things that way. Or, you know what, Charlotte, that's fair. That's fair. Or,
that's my favorite one.
Yeah, fair point.
That's fair.
Or you're starting to convince me a little bit. Or I can agree with part of what you're saying. Part of it, not so much, but part of it, I can agree. I can take some new information in.
Yeah.
And I think also with those who are intelligent and are able to take in new information, they're also kind of looking internally and asking themselves good questions like, what might I be missing here? What part of my perspective might be missing something? What else might be true? What part of Robert's position might be true too? And I think that's just cognitive flexibility.
I like that term.
Cognitive flexibility is the ability to detach from being right and be willing to change your mind based on new information without feeling bad about yourself, without shaming yourself.
It's just new information.
Exactly.
We're just trying to make decisions. Generally speaking, anyone would say, I'm trying to make the best decision with the best information I have at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's truly the case, if you believe that, if that resonates with you, I'm trying to make the best decision with the best information. What do you do when you're faced with new information?
You try to...
Are you grown up enough mm-hmm. and willing and cognitively flexible
mm-hmm.
to add new information and then adjust your course as needed?
Exactly.
Yeah. So as we wrap up today's episode, here are some self-reflection questions for this week. Are you ready?
Okay. You want to go back and forth?
Yes. Okay. Do the first one. I like that.
Okay. Question number one. When was the last time I was in a conversation or disagreement with someone who needed to be right? Ugh. How did that feel?
Yeah.
How did that make me feel? What was that like for me? So if you contemplate that, that should help you to recognize just how damaging this pattern is for connection, because you probably don't want to hang around with that person or talk to that person about those topics anymore.
Question two, observe when recently you have felt justified or compelled, or you've doubled down on your position to prove that you are right.
Oh, who wants to look at that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Next, number three, observe when you have gotten dysregulated. Like when someone shared a perspective with you that differed from your own. So when was the last time you felt yourself getting a little spun up inside because you had to hear a perspective that differed from your own?
Usually in politics.
All the time.
Yeah. Next one. What might your best self do in these situations when you attempt to prove your position or resist someone else's?
And to go along with that, the last question is, what wisdom would you like to remember next time you feel compelled to prove your point? Maybe some wisdom that you learned today on this episode.
Possibly.
Well, that's a wrap for today. Thank you so much for being here. We're grateful for each and every one of you. We kindly ask, if you haven't yet, please leave a comment and a 5-star review. It really does help us to make a greater impact in the world and to help more couples. And if you know someone that this episode might help, please consider sharing it with them.
Of course, be kind to each other this week. Take care of each other. Remember, it's the small things done often that make the biggest impact.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to Master Your Marriage. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, then we want to hear from you. Just go to MasterYourMarriagePodcast.com and send us your question.
Oh, and while you're there, you can also check out our retreats and events and even apply for coaching.
And make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you get advanced notice of when the next episode drops, plus show notes and many extras. Thanks again for tuning in.